KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
For KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Saul Gonzalez, sitting in for Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
If you listen and learn, then you're going to be able to do anything you want next time.
Everybody thinks show business.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone Hollywood.
This week on The Business, it's pilot season in Hollywood. We look at how one show, the ABC comedy Suburgatory, went from idea to pilot to series. Plus, we visit Jeremy Sisto and Cheryl Hines on the set of Suburgatory. But first, the Hollywood news banter. Stick around. It's The Business from KCRW.
You can imagine Hollywood, everything is really driven by
making money.
What's with him?
I'm Saul Gonzalez, sitting in for Kim Masters, who's on vacation, and I'm joined by John Horn of the Los Angeles Times. Hi, John.
Hello, Saul.
Well, listen, there is no more supreme name in Hollywood, right, than Steven Spielberg, but Mr. Spielberg's not having such a great week.
No, it's odd to say that Spielberg is suffering, but he is. As we are talking, A Thousand Words, the Eddie Murphy comedy, is hitting theaters, and it's going to be one of the biggest flops probably in DreamWorks' history. This is a movie that was made 4 years ago and has sat on the shelf for a very long time at Paramount Pictures, which releases DreamWorks movies. It's a movie that at the time sounded like a really good deal, but in the middle of production, Eddie Murphy's Meet Dave came out and crashed and burned, and then Imagine That came out and crashed and burned, and Paramount was looking to get a little distance from those movies, but audiences are not at all interested in going to see A Thousand Words. And on top of that, Spielberg's Terra Nova was canceled, and it may have another life, but again, a big setback for Spielberg in television as well.
Can I ask you about Spielberg in television? When I'm sitting at home and I'm watching my TV, his name just seems to pop up all over the place as the executive producer of this or the executive producer of that. I mean, there's Terra Nova, right? There's the Smash, the musical on NBC. There's Falling Skies on cable.
And don't forget The River on ABC.
Oh, and The River, of course, on ABC. Is there such a thing that, you know, unless he's cloned himself, can you be Steven Spielberg and be stretched too thin?
I think that's a very good point. It brings up a legitimate question. I mean, you can have Wolfgang Puck, you know, cater your dinner party, but is he really going to be in the kitchen, or is it going to be some minion who's going to be there? And the same thing happens with Spielberg. Yes, he's going to be involved, but there's only 24 hours in a given day. Terra Nova, he was actively involved in, and this is a pilot that at $16 million for 2 hours cost more than The Artist, Slumdog Millionaire, The Hurt Locker, any number of recent Best Picture winners. So he was very much involved in that. The other shows, maybe he'll be giving script notes, maybe he'll have some creative meetings. But again, as you point out, you cannot be in charge of all of those things at one time, and perhaps that's what's happening. But again, television is a tough business. Smash had a ton of promotion. So did Terra Nova, and the audiences have just not turned up.
Another big story this past week involves the Motion Picture Association of America, an institution that, of course, sets our movie ratings. They're in the driver's seat when it comes to what's PG-13, what's PG, what's R, and what's beyond R. And they're in a controversy over a very low-profile movie that's gotten a much higher profile because of how they've rated it.
Now, the movie is called Bully. It used to be called The Bully Project. It's a documentary about bullying, and it's an interesting story kind of in the instant case, but it also says something larger about the MPAA's ratings. The MPAA has very flexible and very subjective rules about how sex and violence are depicted in movies and what gets you an R and what gets you a PG-13. But in terms of language, if you say the F word more than once or you say it to describe a sexual act, it's an automatic R rating. And there's a scene in Bully where a certain kid describes to another kid what he's going to do to him, and he uses the F word a number of times. And for that reason alone, the MPAA gave the film an R rating. Now, Harvey Weinstein, who is releasing the film, makes, I think, a very persuasive argument, saying this is a movie about kids. The scene, in fact, is how kids speak to each other. And if you give this film an R rating, a very important movie about a huge social problem, cannot be seen by the audience that it most affects, and that is kids and teens.
And it's also the kind of issue that drives people nuts when it comes to the MPAA's rating system.
No, it's probably the biggest divide over what is and is not a good rating. And it's, again, it's very subjective in terms of these other things. And Lee Hirsch, who directed Bully, I think made a pretty good point. He said, and I'm quoting him now, "I think it's unfortunate that the value judgments by the MPAA allow for graphic violence, homophobia, aggression against women. All the things that we see in a PG-13 film are acceptable." And then he goes on to say, "The scenes that got the R rating have meaning, and that power conveys the intensity of bullying, and that's what this film is about." I also think it's noteworthy to say that in Canada, the film was given a PG rating. So clearly our friends to the north have different standards about what is and is not appropriate language.
And do you think this is finally the straw that breaks the camel's back when it comes to reforming the movie rating system, or do we just go on our merry way and have this kind of controversy come up once or twice a year?
Well, the MPAA said in holding up the R rating, which was appealed, that they have undergone a study about how popular the ratings are, specifically as it relates to language. And not surprisingly, their study found that the ratings were popular and were well liked. Yeah, I think it's an area of debate. I think it will continue to be debated. I think the MPAA has had internal conversations about adding some other rating somewhere between the R and the NC-17 or between the PG-13 and the R rating. But I think this is a really good example. I mean, the movie doesn't come out till March 30th, but I think this conversation about its rating is not going to go away anytime soon.
And on a much lighter note, and whether you're enjoying a PG-13 movie or an R-rated film, you might be doing it with a bag of popcorn, very, very expensive popcorn, according to one man in Michigan.
Joshua Thompson says it actually costs so much that he has filed a class action lawsuit to end what he says is price gouging. And it's not just popcorn, it's soda and candy. He claims that the Michigan Consumer Protection Act is designed to prevent price gouging, and he's brought his lawsuit. And I think, as anybody knows, you can spend as much, if not more, on the concessions than you do on the ticket. And that's where movie theaters make half of their money, on those very pricey snacks. So try to sneak something in and see if they'll stop you.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, Saul.
John Horn of the Los Angeles Times. Coming up later on the show, how Jeremy Sisto, an actor known for dramas like 6 Feet Under and Law & Order, got cast in an ABC comedy. But first, navigating pilot season. You're listening to The Business from KCRW. I'm Saul Gonzalez, filling in for Kim Masters. Pilot season is in full bloom here in Hollywood. The major broadcast networks are frantically producing shows they hope will be their next big hits come the fall. It's a high-stress, high-anxiety time of year for people in the TV business, whether in front of the camera or behind it. We're getting a window into the process by which a show goes from pitch to pilot to series by looking at one show that successfully navigated the journey last year. That's the ABC comedy Suburgatory. Now, Suburgatory is the classic fish-out-of-water story. A single dad with his teenage daughter moves out of New York City to the burbs, all in hopes of providing a better life for his kid. Once there, they encounter a strange new world of spray-tanned, pastel-clad, croquet-playing neighbors.
So, George, you never did say what happened to your wife.
Fred?
It's an honest question. If George wants, he can say no comment.
No comment.
Seriously, what happened?
We separated 15 years ago.
I saw this show once where these twins attached at the face were separated. It was awesome. I think one of them died.
I saw that too. I think one of them did die.
Oh. Are you all done here, honey?
So, back to George's failed marriage. You cheat?
Dad?
I would never dream of cheating on Sheila. Couldn't. She watches me like a hawk. And I love it.
Woo!
Suburgatory was created by Emily Kapnick, who early in her career made an animated series for Nickelodeon. More recently, she was a consulting producer on Parks and Rec and Hung. Kim Masters visited with Kapnick in her Warner Brothers office, where Suburgatory is produced. Kapnick describes what it was like to develop the show with a particular group of executives there, known as the Warner Sisters.
This was my first time developing with this particular group of women, and it was all women. And I loved the Warner Brothers women. We had a great time. My best experience developing. And not just because we got our show on the air, but they were incredibly supportive and protective of the material once we kind of hatched it. So we had our initial meeting, and at an initial meeting like that, you would sit down and say, here's my bag of tricks. These are the kind of things I would like to talk about, and these are the show ideas that interest me. And then they would say, okay, this sounds good or that sounds good. And in this particular meeting, they had a couple of things that they wanted to pitch to me. Some of them were vague, and in the area of suburgatory, it was especially vague. For them, they had optioned the title, just the title, suburgatory.
From whom do you option the title suburgatory?
There was a book treatment for a book that at the time I don't think had been written, and they did not option the underlying material, but they thought, suburgatory, what a cool title. And so the option.
That's kind of amazing, right?
It's strange. I'm like, well, that's a great gig. Just come up with titles for.
Okay, so you're in the room and they say, we have this name.
What they said was, does this word resonate with you? Does this title resonate with you?
Jeez, I think I would be afraid to answer. It's like a Rorschach test. You know, yes, it reminds me of when I was five.
Right, exactly. Well, I mean, it did, though. I think that they had a couple of other things, too. One of them interested me as well. So when I left the meeting, I sat in my driveway and called my agent. And I said, here's the two that I'm kind of circling. I don't think they really loved any of my stuff that much. And for the stuff they talked about, there were two that I liked. And one was this book that they had, which was sort of a very dated dating etiquette book. The other one was Suburgatory. And I said, well, you know, we moved to the suburbs to Larchmont, New York from Manhattan. I grew up in the city and spent just a few years in Westchester. And I said, you know, that's the other one that I'm interested in, is exploring this idea of this sort of transplant from New York in the suburbs. And I think I just decided at that moment that, you know, that was the one to pursue. And so we kind of jumped in and talked about, how do you make this story fresh?
Well, so you then formulate, I don't know how much of the concept of the show, and I assume, when you come back to Warner Brothers at that point, do you have some of a script or an outline? What do you bring them?
I come to them with basically a premise idea for the pilot. And, you know, I think there's a lot of different ways to pitch a show. You can sit down and say, here's the series, here's where I see it going, and not really focus on a pilot story. For me, I feel like talking about a pilot story is so much more engaging in a pitch and easy to follow. And I think that if you do it well, you really know also enough about the show and the world. I think sitting in a room and talking about something that doesn't exist and characters that you don't know, and everyone's furiously taking notes, trying to keep track of who the main characters are and what the concept is and what the premise is. If you can sit down and tell them a story that, you know, is engaging, then you've sort of sucked them in. And at the end of that, when their heads pop up, they really have actually heard something that they can retain and remember. That's how we pitched Suburgatory. We went in and told the pilot story in great depth and great detail.
Had you just thought this through? I mean, you hadn't written any kind of a script at that point.
At that point, I wrote some premise pages, and I think I actually wrote a pitch document that Warner Brothers had the opportunity to look at before we went out to the networks.
And to what degree does it resemble the pilot that you made?
Very much. It's amazing how much of that initial pitch is in the pilot and on the screen. It was very thought out, and it luckily, you know, I think sometimes what happens is you go in there and you pitch, and they like pieces of it, and they like parts of it, and by the time you get down the road and through development, you're like, wow, this is a million miles away from what we initially talked about. That's not the case with this show or the pilot for this show. Almost all of it made it through.
Did you have this vibe? Like, I feel like this is going to work? Or were you just thinking?
No, I can't do that anymore. You can't. Like, it's funny. The guy who directed this pilot, highly talented director named Michael Fresco, he has a fantastic track record of getting his pilots on the air. And I have a fantastic track record for getting pilots shot that do not get on the air. So I said to him, either I'm going to ruin yours or you're going to ruin mine. One of us.
Somebody's track record
is
going to
upset.
Ruined. How many pilots did you have that weren't on the air?
I think Suburgatory was my fourth or fifth pilot. Yeah, I mean.
And yet you got up and continued to fight.
Yeah, well, it's great fun. It really
it's
is.
It's actually fun.
It is.
The crushing disappointment.
Crushing disappointment, not so fun.
Not
but
so
the
fun.
Process of making a pilot and putting it together and sitting down with the director and cinematographer and talking about what we're going to try to do this time that sets us apart and gets us on the air, I think you enter into it with so much hope, and then you sort of divorce yourself from it entirely as you wait.
You're listening to The Business, and then I'm Saul Gonzalez, sitting in for Kim Masters. Kim's talking with Emily Kapnick, creator of the ABC comedy Suburgatory. The show is in its first season and has done respectably well in the ratings. Last year at this time, Kapnick had made the pilot episode and was waiting to hear if ABC would pick it up for a series.
The last pilot season for me, when Suburgatory got ordered, I was saying to my husband, I don't remember there being this much information. I think with Deadline Hollywood and the constant updates and what's on the bubble and what's
right.
hot. And
who might be cast in the third lead. There's this swirl of gossip in the industry about which pilots
yeah,
are
what's hot or what they hear yeah. tested well. I mean, sometimes right. you're hearing, how do they know? How do they know what tested well? I haven't heard anything.
The agents
you know?
Are talking or somebody's assistant yeah. or who knows.
I don't know. You don't know how sound that information is, but nonetheless, if you read it, it settles in your brain.
Now, okay, so I do want to ask you, when you're coming up with this notion, this world of Suburgatory, at what point does a network have to say yes to the whole thing?
Well, we pitched it to all the networks. We took Suburgatory out. And
as a concept.
As a concept. And we did our song and dance. And, you know, if you're fortunate enough to have more than one network interested, then you're in the position of having a little bit of leverage.
Right.
ABC really wanted the show, but we had another interested party, which was Fox. So we were able to say, well, we want a production commitment. Will you shoot our pilot? And Sami Falvey and Kelly Luganbiel, who were the executives that we pitched to, went above and beyond. They called me, you know, after we pitched, and they actually sent me a really funny gift after I pitched there, which was this giant leopard skin bag filled with like all of this stuff from the pitch, like fake nails and spray tan and Red Bull and uh-huh. mustache bleach. And
so they were courting
you. They were courting me. I was flattered. They had me at leopard bag. no, but it was just that kind of enthusiasm. You really want that because it bodes well in the future. And you know that you have people who are invested and passionate.
And you get to say, yes, ABC, they want us and need us.
Yes, we as a group, the Warner Brothers ladies and I say, yes, ABC, here we go. Now, you don't start the process, obviously, of casting. You start the process of writing. So you write an outline, and then you write a script, and then you rewrite your script. You actually rewrite your outline, too. There's a lot of writing and rewriting. And finally, you get to a place where everyone is happy with the material, and then comes the waiting. You know, it sits, and it gets read with the ones that are going to get read. So you wait and hope that your script is in the small pile instead of the big pile.
Right.
And we got the news that we were going to get ordered. And we were one of the first things that got ordered. So we were very happy. You want to be early. It's always a race for everything, for who's going to direct and who your casting director is. And that's what it's about. It's about racing to get the good people before they've been snatched up by someone else. So ABC had a deal with Mike Fresco. He was one of the first few names that we talked about. And he reads the material. Does he like it? I don't know. Apparently there was something else that ABC wanted him to direct, which he didn't jump on. So we had a chance to take a shot at him. We sent the script and he liked it. So we had a meeting at Greenblatt's, if you must know, upstairs.
Greenblatt's Deli, where it's going down. Yeah.
And I guess we must have had some masa ball soup and talked about the show. And then once he was a go, it was like, you know, move and try and snap up the, you know, DP we wanted, casting people, and get going. And the casting is the next step and obviously a very important one.
Coming up after a short break, Jeremy Sisto and Cheryl Hines get cast in Suburgatory. You're listening to The Business from KCRW and KCRW.com.
This is Darby Maloney, producer of The Business. Thanks so much for listening. If you like this show, you would probably also like KCRW's The Treatment with host Elvis Mitchell, where he has in-depth conversations with people who are making news in the world of pop culture. Check it out in the podcast section of iTunes or on your KCRW smartphone app.
You're listening to The Business, and I'm Saul Gonzalez. Kim Masters is away on vacation. And today we're taking a look at the always anxiety-provoking process of taking a TV show idea through pilot season and hopefully getting it picked up for a series. Kim Masters recently visited the set of Suburgatory, a new ABC show that at this time last year was going through exactly that process. Central to that, casting, especially the roles of the urbanite father and daughter at the heart of Suburgatory. They went away from known comedic actors and picked Jeremy Sisto of Law & Order and 6 Feet Under and an unknown actress named Jane Levy for Tessa.
It took me a couple of weeks, but I finally found my favorite thing to do in the suburbs. Sleep.
Tessa, what are you doing? Let's go before she gets here.
She's still watering?
Still watering. Why didn't you set an alarm?
Hitting snooze. I was having the most amazing dream about Manhattan.
That was so amazing.
We were still living there.
Uh-huh.
They also wanted someone surprising for the role of their spray-tanned, leggy neighbor, Dallas, who's played by Cheryl Hines, an improv actress known for being Larry David's wife on Curb Your Enthusiasm. Suburgatory was created by Emily Kapnick. Kim Masters visited with Kapnick in her Warner Brothers office.
So where does it start? Does it start with Tessa?
Yeah, Tessa and George were at the center. And it got sort of narrowed down to Jane and one other girl. And I think that Jane was probably the less conventional choice in that, you know, the other girl, also a great talented actress and probably a little sunnier in disposition. And maybe in my mind felt like what you would more typically think of as the lead of an ABC half hour comedy. And Jane felt like the genuine article to me, in that she felt very grounded and a little bit offbeat.
So you've got her.
Yeah.
Now, Jeremy Sisto is not a guy you look at and say comedy.
No. We knew from the beginning that we were going to be drawn to actors who were not necessarily of the half-hour comedy world. It just made sense. You know, we have a story about a guy who feels uncomfortable and out of his element. The last thing we really wanted was a half-hour comedy guy who, like, knew where all the jokes were and was, you know, reaching for the funny, so to speak. So putting a grounded actor in that role made a lot of sense to us. And Jeremy, we found some sort of online evidence, some Funny or Die stuff that hinted that he certainly had a sense of humor and a very offbeat sense of humor. So we kind of all looked at it and pointed at it and thought, can we take the leap? Because it is a leap. He was, you know, an offer name, wasn't going to come in audition, and obviously an unconventional choice for the role.
He did not have to get together with Jane and see how the chemistry was?
No. He did not.
Nice for him.
Yeah, nice for him indeed. And we just had a brief phone call where I sort of gave him my kind of pitch. I walked around my backyard in circles and tried to convince him to come to Los Angeles and do this pilot. He's a diehard New Yorker, and I don't know that he loves being out here, but I know he loves the show, and we're very lucky to have him. And also the role of Dallas was hugely important, and I adore Cheryl Hines. I was a huge fan of hers. I also knew that, you know, she had a really strong comedic background, and this would be a departure for her. And we thought, she should do this. It's different, and, you know, it's big and it's sexy and it's something that we haven't seen her do before. And she really rose to the occasion. I mean, gosh, what we do to her in wardrobe alone.
I was watching them hook up her mic this morning and just thinking, oh boy, I have to
know,
wear
in the course. Poor woman and the tan and the hair and extensions and my goodness.
Emily Kapnick is the creator and showrunner of Suburgatory. Thank you so much for talking to us today.
My pleasure. Thanks for being here.
After leaving Emily's office, Kim stopped by the set where Jeremy Sisto and Cheryl Hines were shooting.
Love it. Next scene.
And so you, Jeremy, you had done, well, you both had done, like, these incredible cable shows, and then you went to Law & Order. So were you thinking it's time to do a sitcom, or what?
I had tried to book a sitcom, you know, for a couple of years. There was a period when I was younger where I was trying to prove something to myself, and I felt like dramas, you know, I felt like I had to make myself miserable in order to be worthy of the money that actors make.
Six Feet Under was just right up that alley.
Yeah, so Six Feet Under worked. But by that time, somewhere around there, I was starting to be able to laugh at myself and embrace, you know, wanting to do comedy. But by that point, no one saw me as funny. And so and for a long time, that was a feedback I got. Was, is he funny? Can he come in and show us that he's funny? And I'd try to be funny for them when I went in, and I'd be nervous and I wasn't funny. And, you know, so I tested for a couple of, right before Law and Order, I tested for a show, a comedy, and kind of bombed it. And so then when they offered it to me, I was really open to embracing a comedy, but I knew about myself that I would have difficulty doing any kind of punchline setup kind of comedy, because if there's ever anything expected from me, then I have a real difficulty sort of offering that.
Then you can't do it,
just
right.
Something inside me makes me want to give something slightly different.
But you had the juice. You didn't have to audition or anything.
Yeah, exactly.
You just said, I'll do it.
Well, it was towards the end of pilot season. My friend was just, I was just talking to my friend. He's like, remember right before Suburgatory came along, you were saying, I hope my agents call me again, because it was right at the end of pilot season. And it was my first pilot season after Law & Order. So I was like, I might not do anything. But still, being out of work as an actor, you feel like it might never stop. And then it came along. So, yeah, it was really fortunate. And things like that, so many things have to line up, you know. I think they offered it to Matthew Broderick before me, so he had to turn it down. And so,
did that happen?
It did, yeah. They offered it to Broderick.
Matthew Broderick is George.
Oh. It'd be a good show.
I just think of you as George.
Right.
So, Cheryl, you had come from another incredibly beloved cable show, and that show is totally different. Like, right, tons and tons of improv, from what I understand.
Yes,
Curb Your Enthusiasm
was all improvised. So Larry wrote a story outline, and then all of the dialogue was improvised. And as a matter of fact, the first two seasons, I didn't even get to see the outlines, so I didn't even know what the show was about. I would drive to; it was all on location. I would, you know, get the call sheet the night before to see where I was going, and get to the set and ask hair and makeup if they knew anything about the show. And they said, we're not allowed to tell you anything. And then that was it.
So you would, like, literally find yourself in a scene and they wouldn't give you direction on what the scene was about?
Yes.
Like, in the scene, you and Larry have a fight about...
Yeah, he would tell me something specific if I needed to know. Like, in this scene, your parents are coming for 2 weeks. He might just tell me that. So in the scene, he says, how long are they going to be here? I said, well, they're here for 2 weeks. And then that's all I needed to know. And then he, of course, hates that idea. And then I love the idea. And that's usually what the show is about.
So when Suburgatory came along, what was your thought?
Well, I loved the script. I thought it was very smart. And this character of Dallas is a 180 from what I did on Curb Your Enthusiasm, which I also wanted to embrace, because I come from a sketch comedy background and improv. So it reminded me of those days at the Groundlings Theater when we did characters and, you know, you wrote your scenes, and the writers here are so great. And Emily, I mean, she's a brilliant writer. So I loved it.
Did you think, oh my God, how many animal patterned outfits with a push-up bra?
I didn't think that far ahead. No, I had no idea. It would take me 2 hours to get in the hair and makeup. I just thought I thought they'd like me the way I was. But they didn't.
That was Kim speaking with Cheryl Hines and Jeremy Sisto on the set of the ABC comedy Suburgatory, which airs Wednesday nights at 8:30. And that's The Business. Darby Maloney produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. To make a comment about today's show, go to kcrw.com/thebusiness, where you can stream or podcast the show. And you can listen to us anytime on demand with the KCRW smartphone apps. And you can always subscribe to the podcast through iTunes. The show is produced and distributed by KCRW. I'm Saul Gonzalez for Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.